Chapter 18. We are symbols. Grounded angel. A subterranean break. Eternity Wall, 3rd to the 7th of Quartus. Four thoughts of death afflicted Sanguinius more often as the days passed. The vision of Horus standing over him in leering triumph leaked into his waking hours. Dawn had little time for him, and when he sought out the Sigillite for company, he was nowhere to be found. Consumed with foreboding, the great angel sent himself out upon a tour of the walls. He did not tell Dawn. He had no wish to hear another lecture about keeping himself safe. "I am more than a symbol," he had said to Dawn.
"Your value as such should not be underestimated," Dawn replied.
"Then I should put myself to use and be seen on the wall." He would be gainsaid no further, and left Dawn fuming. Dawn was right. All of them were symbols, and though he hated the role his father had placed upon him, and which Gilliman had exploited, he took upon himself the burden of humanity's hopes again. This time he did not fly. He went on foot, surrounded by all the ceremony his position allowed, so that the people would better see him. Ascalon insisted they stay upon the walls and not venture into the city wards.
"The streets are not safe," he said.
There was unrest throughout the palace, the worst in the outlying districts close to the walls. Food and water were scarce. Fear was in plentiful supply. Privation did the work of 10,000 enemy operatives, tying down troops to watch civilians when they would better serve the defence on the walls. Eventually Sanguinius relented, and they stayed out of the city on the perimeter defences, where the angel might be seen by the populace from afar, and the warriors of the legions stood at guard with predictable discipline. He set out with a dozen standard-bearers, both imagnifers and signifers. The serried banners of the 9th Legion made an awe-inspiring sight in ranks behind the Primarch, and the winged figures of the Sanguinary Guard swooped overhead, weapons ready. Their war gear glinted in the fires of the bombardment. But there was more, an inner light that shone from the Primarch, so those who saw him said. To these lucky witnesses, the Blood Angels appeared as a procession of demigods passing along the walls. Wherever Sanguinius went, memories of sunlit dawns were kindled, and people remembered better times and hoped that those times might yet return. The arbitrators and enforcers of each city block he passed reported a calming of mood and a cessation of violence that lasted several days. His procession took him many days, past several areas facing various siege camps of the Dark Mechanicum, but in time he found himself staring down the Daylight Wall, on that section overlooked by the heaped massif of the Eternity Wall spaceport. Sanguinius's stride was the speed of a legionary's jog, which was the speed of an unmodified human running, so they travelled many kilometres in a few hours, and by the closing of the day, by which point Sanguinius had been on the Daylight Wall for 7 hours, they had covered nearly 100, and so made their way through lesser league castles to the Helios Gate. The party headed directly for the command centre at the tower's heart. 1,000 men and women laboured in a modest recreation of the Grand Borealis Strategium. Emergency lumens saturated the spherical room with threatening red, and though thousands of hololiths and other displays provided illumination of other hues, they were too weak to banish the bloody glow. Once more, Raldoron greeted him.
"My lord," he said.
"The section where the first tower was brought down has been repaired?" the Primarch asked.
His eyes went to screens showing the enemy siege camp on the horizon, aglow with active shielding and flashing with the work of construction.
"Thane's men did as they pledged," said Raldoron.
"Truly they can work miracles with false stone. The wall there is plugged, and the walkways reconnected. They have repaired most of the damage so far inflicted on my section, my lord, while salamanders repair ruptured power networks and bring guns back to life. It is good to see our kindreds working together. I thought not to see the like again. There has been so much suspicion bred between legions."
"But there is still damage."
Sanguinius did not criticise. There was damage everywhere, Worst on the far north of the Duskwall, on the opposite side of the palace, where a score of major towers had been reduced to rubble by arcane energy cannons, and the wall only held at great cost.
87 Waycastles from the 500 in my protection are damaged, 4 lost entirely, said Raldoron. The Helios Gate comes under protracted attack with each aerial foray. The Aegis here is failing. Every attack sees more void blisters scoured from their mountings, though the Emperor's squadrons make them suffer for it. I fear what Horus's Martian lackeys have in store for us behind that energy screen.
We have been lucky thus far, said Sanguinius.
The walls are holding past Dawn's more optimistic estimates.
He ran his gaze over the displays, away from the live feeds covering the siege camp.
The outworks less so, he said, gesturing to the images of scarred, twisted lands where trenches, walls and men had been only a fortnight before.
The enemy continue to test our defences and taunt us with their intent.
He pointed at the shimmering energy fields of the siege camp.
This is a ritual. The palace is the epicentre. I imagine whatever they plan will be fueled by blood.
All the Blood Angels present had been at Cygnus and at Davin. What had been consigned to the realm of impossibility was now a matter of course.
Sorcery must be accounted for strategically like any other factor of war. We help them by fighting. We lose if we stand back. We are damned if we do and damned if we do not.
An ancient saying, said Raldoron.
But apt, said Ascalon.
The conscripts fight bravely, said Raldoron. They hang on and repulse the enemy every time, though they dwindle in number daily, and I am forced to order the wall guns activated more frequently to bombard compromised sections. I regret we cannot go down to aid them ourselves. But I understand my orders, he added.
Lord Dawn forbade me from fighting outside the walls, said Sanguinius.
He turned his sad, noble eyes onto his equerry. He did not forbid us to venture outside.
My lord.
Let us go down outside the wall. I want to go among them. I want to see the troops. I want to tell them their heroism is valued.
There is no attack at the moment, said Raldoron thoughtfully, and no enemy near the gate. But the bombardments come without warning.
There are other considerations.
Ascalon stepped in front of his Primarch.
There have been mutinies on the line.
You suggest that I, a son of the Emperor, have something to fear from my father's subjects? Sanguinius said.
You are not immortal, my lord, said Ascalon quietly.
As Sanguinius's death approached, all the Blood Angels had a foreboding that their lord might leave them soon. They felt it in their hearts and in their humours. Ascalon's words hung over them like the dying echoes of a funeral bell.
Nothing truly is.
Sanguinius smiled sadly.
But I do not die today.
Gather additional legionaries if it will make you feel easier, Ascalon.
But I am going outside the wall.
Palace Outworks, Daylight Wall, Section 16, 7th of Quartus. Katsuhiro was there when an angel came down from the distant heights into the mudscape of the outworks. He arrived without warning, passed among them like something from a dream, and was gone before they could acknowledge his reality.
Sanguinius was gold, and he was glory.
Familiarity can lead a man to accept the worst circumstances as normal. In the blood and the destruction, where flesh was pounded into the pulverized stone, Katsuhiro had forgotten what purity looked like. In the person of Sanguinius, he was reminded. The first Katsuhiro heard were shouts of amazement, and he looked back from No Man's Land to see a soft glow. Then Sanguinius himself. He stood behind the broken rampart in full view of the enemy. There were snipers in the dropcraft wrecks, but he forgot them. The guns on the walls were firing, aimed at the siege camp and the contravelation that grew day by day around the city. Counter-bombardments answered from the enemy lines, The orbital batteries had not ceased, nor had the fleet bombardment, and shells periodically broke the flickering voids to blast up craters among the defensive lines. The roar of the siege was at its worst, save for those times the foe made direct attempts on the outworks, when all became a bedlam of flashing light and terror. A hush descended. Though the guns continued to fire, their violence was somehow lessened by the Primarch's presence. Men and women fell to their knees as Sanguinius passed along the line. His entourage of aides, standard-bearers and the gold-armoured and winged elite that guarded him were almost as affecting as the Primarch himself. Grumbles were silenced. Fear ebbed. Filthy hands reached out to touch the Lord of Angels. His warriors moved to push the soldiers back, but Sanguinius raised his hand, just slightly, and the guards moved away. A female soldier was the first to dare to hold out her fingers to his wings. The feathers twitched, but Sanguinius stood firm and allowed her to caress him. Another person came forwards, then another, until a crowd was around the great angel, arms radiating inwards like worshippers from less enlightened times, stretching for their idol. Sanguinius was uncomfortable, Katsuhiro could see. The Primarch kept his perfect face as neutral as he could, but it was there in the set of his lips, and the way he looked upwards, away from the supplicants around him. Like all the rest, Katsuhiro was captivated, and moved towards him, his feet dragging through the mud of their own volition. The angel's radiance touched Katsuhiro. He felt a peace in his heart, a calmness in his mind, and a stilling of fears. The aches and chills that sickened him were alleviated briefly. For a moment he felt whole again. Surrounded by the dirty and the desperate, Sanguinius shone as pure as sunlight reflected from snow. Then it was over. The light dimmed. The great angel's guards moved forwards and, gently as they could, pushed back the weeping crowd so Sanguinius could address them. "Be brave, children of Terra," he said. "Your courage and your fortitude are most needed in this war. And I, on behalf of my brother Rogel Dorn and the Emperor of Mankind, thank you." With those words he moved on, his crimson-armoured sons marching in wary perimeter. Their boots were smeared with the muck of the field, but Sanguinius was pristine, or so it seemed. He was as much a vision as a solid being, and as a vision he was untouched and untouchable by the filth of the mundane world. Katsuhiro watched him go, joy and awe overwhelming him.
"You there!"
A man with a sergeant's rank insignia, stitched to his civilian clothes, accosted Katsuhiro. The man was trying too hard, probably angry at his own awed reaction to the Primarch. Not one man had continued his duties while Sanguinius was there.
"Stop your gawking! Captain Janan is looking for volunteers."
He looked Katsuhiro up and down.
"A little small, but I think you'll just about do."
Janan was sick. Katsuhiro was not the only soldier feeling ill. A host of minor ailments had swept through the defence force. Coughs, colds and digestive complaints to add to the misery of rad poisoning. Nothing immediately fatal, but every sickness wore down the resolve of the men and women in the outworks, making their condition that little more insufferable, and every misery increased the chance that they would run. But Janan was genuinely afflicted. He was propped up in a makeshift bed, occupying the shell of a bunker. Part of the roof had been blown in by a direct hit. The gap was covered over with corrugated sheeting. The walls were blackened. Katsuhiro couldn't stop looking at the marks. Much would be the soot from the incinerated human bodies. It was shelter, and Janan needed it. His eyes were red and puffy, and his nose ran. His skin had turned an even unhealthier stage of grey. Sores spotted his mouth, and his breath was rank. Though Katsuhiro was never nearer than an arm's length away, the stench of it filled the enclosed space. Katsuhiro arrived to find Doramek, Runakan, and the woman present. She and Doramek were drawn with hunger, but less afflicted than the others. Janan coughed before he spoke. a light tickle that grew into heavy, rib-punishing hacks. When it subsided, he spoke quickly, in case it began again.
Acting Lieutenant Doremek here has come up with a worrying possibility. There are tunnels. There are...
He ran a hand over his face.
Doremek, you explain.
I'll keep this simple, Doremek said, shifting his gun on his shoulder. There are supply tunnels under the battlefield running out from the second line to the bastions. Some of them have been opened by bombardment. They might give the enemy away behind our lines. I think we should check them out. Jane Anne's eyes closed.
You're a good man, Doremek. A real find. There we have it. I need someone to go into the tunnels to see what's left.
He swallowed. His pale lips trembled.
To see if they're a risk.
He was struggling to speak and coughed again. Through spluttering breath, he managed...
Dismissed! Be about it!
Before he curled in over himself, a bowl was brought, and he bent double to vomit up a stream of red-streaked phlegm.
What's wrong with him? Katsuhiro asked Doremek. It's not rad poisoning, is it?
He added. They all suffered that to a degree. Anti-rad pills kept the worst effects at bay, but Katsuhiro lived in terror of the day they stopped working.
Nah, it's the camp sickness,
Bunnikan said.
What do you know about it? Doremek said.
He strode easily through the mud. The woman, Miz, he'd heard Doremek call her, was even more assured. Thin-faced Ranakan scampered rodent-like, his small feet pit-pattering. Only Katsuhiro was struggling, needing to wrench his boots from the sucking ground with every step.
You've never been in a war before, Ranakan, said Doremek.
I have. I fought on 5 worlds for the Emperor.
Katsuhiro looked at him in mild astonishment.
I was born Ive Scum, and I am Ive Scum. But I was a soldier in between,
Ranakan said proudly.
I've seen people get sick all the time,
he sniggered.
Then they die.
Nasty little piece of work, Doremek said.
You are a high threat. In this place, awful as it is, we have medicine. That's the reason why you're not all dead from rads yet.
They're stopping the rads, but what about everything else? The Medicaid aren't doing any good,
said Katsuhiro.
Do you know, Katsuhiro, I like you, but you take forever to catch on. Exactly, the Medicaid aren't doing anything. These sicknesses are coughs and sneezes and upset bellies. Nothing any antiviral or bacteriophage shouldn't stamp out. But they're not working.
They were walking away from the front, towards the second line. Bastion 16 loomed large to their right.
Is Horus using germ war on us?
Now you're getting it, said Doremek. Could be.
I feel dreadful. Why are you still healthy?
Katsuhiro said.
Natural resilience, Doremek said humorlessly.
Be quiet, all of you,
Miz snapped. She pulled ahead, heading for a gap blown into the second line. Twisted lengths of plasteel reinforcement writhed up like briars around the breach.
Why'd you let her speak like that to you? Said Ranakan. If my woman spoke to me like that, I'd give her a hiding.
That attitude explains your lack of female company. She's not my woman. I barely know her.
I think you do, said Ranakan slyly. I think you know her much better than you're saying.
Doremek grunted.
What can I say? I lose my heart to pretty faces. That's as far as it goes. I know her about as well as you do.
What did you think of the Primarch?
Asked Katsuhiro, trying to find something positive in the day. Doremek shrugged.
How did he make you feel?
It annoyed Katsuhiro that the question was turned around on him, but he answered anyway.
Joy? Awe?
They headed down the slope of the crater. Filthy water puddled the bottom. As they skirted it, Doremek glanced back.
That's not all, is it? Come on now. We're all comrades here. Be honest.
I feel sad,
said Katsuhiro uncomfortably.
Hollow.
Insignificant?
Katsuhiro nodded. They walked into the network of trenches between lines 2 and 1. Large sections of it were collapsed and abandoned.
They do that, them and their sons. I ask myself why the Emperor created them,
Thoromek said. Miz was well ahead, and he spoke more freely when she wasn't listening in.
He always said they were to protect us, and that men would take over when they were done. But why make something so powerful, so beyond humanity?
Oh, that's treason, that, said Rannachan.
Shut it, you, said Doramek.
He's right, Rannachan, said Katsuhiro. I don't know what to think anymore. I felt insignificant when I saw Sanguinius.
He fell quiet for a few paces.
This is their war, he said quickly. We're just in the way.
Doramek nodded.
That's about the size of it.
The Aegis thrummed painfully overhead. A shell pierced the energy membrane and dived murderously for the ground, scattering troops with a terrifying howl. It bored into the mud and stone a few meters ahead of the first line and detonated, lofting a section of the outwork ramparts upwards with a searing flash. Katsuhiro and the others hit the ground the instant before it struck. He kept his hands over his head as debris pattered everywhere. They got up. Men were screaming. New corpses waited to be carted off by servitor orderlies to the funeral pits. Katsuhiro looked on helplessly at a screaming man clutching the ragged stumps of his legs. There was nothing he could do. Doramek was already walking on. The others followed. The screaming had stopped before they'd gone 100 meters more. Miz was over by a small, isolated bunker at the end of its own run of trench.
"Get a move on!"
she shouted.
"I thought this was your idea," said Katsuhiro.
"It was," said Doramek. "Truly."
"I thought you said she wasn't your woman,"
Rannachan said unpleasantly.
"I told you. She's not,"
said Doramek, and jumped into the trench. A small plaque over an armoured door proclaimed the bunker Nexus 015. Miz did something to open the lock, and the four of them descended into the dark under the battlefield. A short spiral staircase brought them out into a tunnel just wide enough for two men to walk abreast. Cabling hung in long sweeps from loops set into the ceiling. The tunnel was made of precast ferrocrete sections, but if it had been laid straight, it no longer was. Deformation of the battlefield by the bombardment pushed the tunnel out of true, in some places forcing the segments apart and allowing water to seep in. As a result, a stream of dirty water, ankle-deep and polluted with bodily fluids, ran along the bottom, collecting into deeper pools where the tunnel sagged. The tunnel shook every now and then when a shell or energy beam made it through the Aegis. The ground transmitted the vibrations well, and down there, without other distractions to the senses, hits on the earth seemed more frequent than they had above. Doramek consulted a map. Miz paid particular attention to it, then pointed off down the tunnel. The pair of them disappeared around a kink in the line. Katsuhiro made to follow them, but was stopped by a grubby hand.
"Did you see that?" said Rannachan. "She had a cipher wand."
"So what?"
said Katsuhiro grumpily. His bones ached with his fever and the rads. He welcomed the quiet under the battlefield. He wanted to lie down. Standing still made the aching worse.
"Where did she get it from?"
said Rannachan.
"I don't know. Jainan?"
"Then why didn't he give it to Doramek?"
"He's not thinking clearly. He's sick."
Rannachan gave a smile, partway between sympathetic and patronizing.
"Listen, I know you don't like me very much. You think I'm Underhive scum, and I am. Because of that, I can see something odd is happening here. Those two know each other. Trust me. There's something going on here. I..."
Footsteps splashed back towards them.
"Come on, stop hanging back. We need your guns if there are infiltrators down here," said Doramek.
"I bet you will," muttered Rannachan.
"Coming,"
said Katsuhiro.
"Just catching our breath, that's all."
They followed the tunnels as best they could. A little way beyond the kink was a crossroads. The western line went half a kilometre towards the walls before terminating in another staircase leading back to the surface. The northern line had taken a direct hit and was open to the sky. A surprised sentry, posted to keep soldiers from hiding down there, challenged them. Doramek told them of their business, and they quizzed him as to the state of the tunnel beyond.
"All got it,"
he said. He had a nigh impenetrable accent.
Up at the flat! Far as the Helios Gate!
Doramek thanked him.
Back this way, lads,
he said. Miz said nothing. Back at the crossroads, they turned east, away from the wall. Katsuhiro couldn't decide what the tunnels were for. They were too small to move many troops or munitions, or to shelter men from the bombs. They could have been escape routes, he supposed. He asked Doramek what he thought, but the veteran muttered something he didn't catch.
Lines for power? For water?
Rannikan said, pointing to the bundles of cables hanging down.
And yeah, probably so the officers can run away and not die with the rest of us.
Neither answer satisfied Katsuhiro, but no other was forthcoming. Eventually they arrived at a wall in the tunnel. The power lines disappeared through a plasteel plate stenciled with a large numeral 16. Doramek shook his head.
Nothing the enemy can do with this, he said. Too small, too short, too fragmented. I declare myself satisfied.
He rolled up his map.
Come on, back to our posts. Our little excursion is over.
It took little time to retrace their steps. As they reached the bottom of the iron stair, Katsuhiro paused.
Something's changed.
Shh.
Doramek had his head cocked to one side.
I tell you, something's changed,
said Katsuhiro.
It's the shells, said Doramek.
The noise of the bombardment was so ubiquitous that it took a moment for Katsuhiro to register they had stopped. The tunnel wasn't shaking.
Shh. Do you hear that?
What? What do you mean? I hear nothing,
said Rannikan.
Exactly.
Oh, the bombardment. It has really stopped. Oh, thank the Emperor.
Katsuhiro forgot his aches and forced his way up the stairs. Rannikan was right behind him, and they hurried through the door together. Outside, the sky had ceased to burn. Rolling ash clouds filled the air. Although the palace guns had not relented flinging their cannonade towards the heavens, without the shelling from orbit, the battlefield felt quiet. Katsuhiro's ears rang with the lack of noise. All down the line, cheers fluttered from lips pale with tiredness.
They stopped,
said Katsuhiro, letting his las rifle dangle from its straps so he could grasp Runakan's skinny arms. The hiver smiled back at him.
They have!
Miz pushed past, eyes on the heavens. Doramek shook his head pointedly.
I'd stop that if I were you, he said.
But it stopped,
said Katsuhiro. Excited chatter rose from the soldiers. More and more were looking upwards. Only the veterans, few in number, remained stern and watchful. That should have informed Katsuhiro something was about to happen. But hope outdoes sense in every contest.
They've stopped bombing because they're coming at us again.
Doramek put his face between Rannikan's and Katsuhiro's.
So?
Said Rannikan.
We beat them back half a dozen times. Let them come.
No, no, no,
said Doramek with a cruel smile.
If they're not firing, it's because they don't want to hit their own troops. They've not minded about that before, have they? Stand ready, boys. They're going to have another go. And I don't think they'll be sending cannon fodder this time.